An Osho Talk.
Yaku-san.
Straight to the point of enlightenment. Number 5.
Once, Yaku-san asked his disciple Ungan, "What are you doing?" Ungan said, "I am carrying water." Yaku-san asked, "What about that fellow?" Ungan replied, "He is here." Yaku-san then asked, "For whom are you working?" Ungan replied, "I am busy on behalf of that fellow." Yaku-san asked, "Why don't you let that fellow work with you?" Ungan said, "Osho, don't make a fool of him." Yaku-san said, "Don't say that. Has he ever carried water?" Once Yaku-san said to Dogo, Ungan's brother, "I have a very special phrase which I have never told anybody." Dogo observed, "It is already following you." On another occasion, Ungan asked Yaku-san, "How do you express the phrase?" Yaku-san said, "It is not a question of expression." Dogo commented, "Now you have expressed it."
Friends, the Prime Minister of India, Mr. Rajiv Gandhi, has made few very significant statements. They have to be discussed not only here but around the world. He has said that India is suffering from alien influence coming from the West. The materialism. Hence, we should, according to him, reject materialism and enhance our spiritual heritage . I want Mr. Rajiv, with all due respect to him, to know it clearly, India is not suffering from materialism. It is suffering from a strange disease of which the West is also suffering. India is suffering because it has accepted only half of the man. Man is both matter and spirit, the earth and the sky, the outer and the inner. Reject one and you will suffer. The West is suffering by rejecting the inner. The inner has its own needs. they have to be nourished, evolved, brought to their ultimate peak in an awakened soul. The East, particularly India, is suffering by rejecting materialism. And Rajiv Gandhi is again insisting the same fallacy. India is the oldest country in the world, but it has not developed science. It has not developed technology. It has not developed medical science. It has lived in utter poverty. The poverty cannot be dispelled without scientific, technological development. If you reject materialism, science is rejected automatically. By rejecting materialism, where you will land? In his election propaganda, he was talking to bring the country into the 21st century. And now, he wants to reject materialism, that means falling back thousands of years. You will have to reject electricity, you will have to reject trains, you will have to reject cars, you will have to reject your nuclear plants. Has he forgotten that he has been working hard for the nuclear plants? They don't belong to spirituality. You will have to reject all medical science, all surgery. You will have to reject all birth control methods. Do you want to kill this whole country, commit suicide? And what is your heritage you are bragging about? From where it starts? From the Rig Vedas? That is the ancient most scripture. It can be taken as a milestone. In Rig Veda, human sacrifice was a routine thing. It was called Narmedha. Killing human beings as a sacrifice before an fictitious god, Ashwamedha, killing the horses as sacrifice to the fictitious god. And you won't believe, Hindus continuously struggle that cows should not be slaughtered. But in Rig Veda, there was Gomed, a slaughter of the cow as a sacrifice to God. But God does not eat the meat, the flesh. What was happening to the flesh of men sacrificed, horses sacrificed, cows sacrificed? It was distributed as a presence of God, as prasad. Do you want to go back to those days? Your ancient heritage does not believe in the equality of men. For 5,000 years it has been torturing the Sudras, the untouchables. Your ancient heritage believed in slaves. People were oxen just like commodities. Particularly women were oxen in open market. Do you want this heritage to be continued? Millions of women have been sacrificed by India in the so-called Sati Pratha, dying with your husband alive in the funeral pyre. India has never accepted the woman as equal to men. The great, the so-called great and self-styled Saint Tulsidas, who is worshipped by the Indians very much, even the villagers. Says in his story of the Rama that a woman should be beaten often, otherwise you will not be able to control her. But what is the need of controlling? And who are you to control? He counts women with the Sudras, the untouchables. They should be beaten. He compares women with the drums, just as you beat the drums, otherwise there will be no sound. The woman should be beaten so she remains in control. I want to ask Rajiv Gandhi, do you want all this heritage? It is against your constitution. You are talking against your own constitution. The constitution, abundance, makes it a crime for any woman to be burnt alive by the priest and the family on the funeral pyre. It considers it a heinous crime. And the Prime Minister of India says, I want my country to rejoice into its heritage. And your heritage is the worst and rotten heritage one can have. It is your heritage that millions are starving. By the end of this century, you will see 500 million people starving and dying. Only science and technology can help. Only birth control methods can help. But you are denying all materialism. Why this country is so poor, so ancient, so intelligent? Why it is so poor? The intelligence has been distracted from the right path. Continuous insistence that renounce the world, and the insistence came from people who were kings, princes, who have lived luxury and found it is meaningless wastage of life. All the 24 Tirthankaras of the Jainas are the kings. Gautam Buddha is a prince, was going to succeed his father as a king. Krishna and Rama, the Hindu reincarnations of God are kings. These people have lived the luxury. They have seen the futility of it. That it does not nourish your inner being. They renounce the world. But because they renounce the world, they started teaching everybody to renounce the world without looking at the background. All are not kings. All are not super rich. This is the way how India's intelligence has been distracted. People did not see the implication that these people are coming from royal families, everyone. The Buddha, Mahavira, Rama, Krishna, all are coming from royal families. It is their luxurious life, many women, wine, continuous music, dance, and they have nothing else to do. They got frustrated. But remember, the background is the most important thing. And they renounced the world. And because they renounced the world, they started teaching to everybody, renounce the world. Everybody was poor, utterly poor. There was nothing to renounce. But the whole intelligence got caught into it. These people taught India that everything outside you is illusory. It is not the case. The objective reality has its own existence, its own reality. Just as the subjective, the inner, has its own reality. What is needed is not discarding materialism. What is needed is bringing materialism and spiritualism to a meeting. They are already meeting in your body. Your soul and your body are continuously in deep consonance, in a deep harmony. They are already meeting in the whole universe. Everywhere life is in tune with nature, in matter. It is just a mental projection that outside is unreal, so discard it. If it is unreal, then what is the point of discarding it? If it is not there, why you are escaping from it? Nobody escapes from nothing. You know very well it is there. But you are for centuries lived as escapists. I know. Just few days before he was talking about one earth, one world. What happened to that one earth and one world? Now he is talking about an aligned influence from the West. Now the world has become two. It is no more one. And discard the influence. But do you see the implications? Discarding science and technology, you will not be able to survive at all. But I understand the politician. The politician does not say the truth. He says what appeals to the masses, what appeals to the ego of the masses. The poor India has nothing else to brag about. The only thing it can brag about is spirituality, which nobody can see. But I want to tell to Rajiv Gandhi that the masses are the greatest enemies of themselves. They live in superstitions. Child marriage continues, although it is banned by the law, by the constitution. But no action is taken against child marriage. Women are still burnt in the funeral pyres, worshipped because they have jumped into the funeral pyre, temples are razed, and the government simply watches. And if you drop all birth control method, this country will become such a huge burden, you will not be able to feed, you will not be able to give clothes, you will not be able to give shelter. It will be simply chaos and death. If you insist on your ancient heritage, you are driving the country not towards 21st century, but towards its graveyard. He has also insisted in his statement that we should continue our morality. Our religion, what morality? Just for instance, India has called one of its heroes, Yudhishthir, as the king of religion, Dharmaraj. And he's gambled his whole kingdom. Not only the kingdom, he gambled his own wife and lost everything. And still he is thought to be the king of religion and morality. A gambler gambling his own wife just like any commodity. People think, and perhaps Rajiv Gandhi believes in those people, that India was very moral in the past. It is absolutely absurd. Because all Hindu scriptures, all Buddhist scriptures, all Jaina scriptures continuously teach people, don't steal, don't commit adultery, don't murder people. To whom these statements were addressed? If India was moral, there would not have been so many thieves that Buddha has to continue for 42 years, insisting every day, morning and evening, be moral, that indicates that the country was not moral. Otherwise, Buddha will be thought insane. You don't talk to moral people about morality. You don't talk to people which they already have. You talk only about things which they don't have. And it is not only Buddha. Mahavira is doing the same. And all the religions that have arisen on this subcontinent, continuously giving sermons to people, those sermons give the real history of the country. People were thieves, people were murderers, people were suicidal, people were rapists. All kinds of crimes were committed. Otherwise, all scriptures will become absolutely meaningless. So what is your heritage? You want to continue all this? And where you will land? Just on the spinning wheel that can help the country to enter into 21st century, it will help the country to fall back into the first century. Bola cart, acceptable technologies for the spiritual people. And my own understanding is that spirituality is the highest value, your highest need. When you have fulfilled your material needs, suddenly, a great understanding arises in you that the needs are fulfilled, but I remain in discontent and despair. My inner world is empty, unfulfilled. My insistence is that materialism should become the stepping stone for spirituality. There is no other scientific way of thinking. He says, it was important to ensure that the essence of our legacy was not lost in this deluge that is coming from the West. The cultural heritage should be preserved and projected as a model of development for the future. Great. I wonder, Rajiv Gandhi, whether you are writing your speeches yourself. Because I think you an intelligent, educated person. Perhaps these speeches are written by ghost writers. Because I cannot see that you will commit such contradictions. Mr. Gandhi said, the basic thinking should be one of simple solutions rather than a confrontationist attitude, since that ended up with compromises that don't work are consensus which works even less. Simple solutions for complex problems. Simple solutions for simple problems. Complex solutions for complex problems. It is such a clear thing. For all problems, simple solutions won't do. Because the problems are complex. A brain surgeon is dealing with a complex problem, very complex. You cannot call a butcher to make brain surgery. That will be a simple solution. Soon there will be no problem and nobody who has the problem. Both will be finished. A butcher cannot do brain surgery. Even all the surgeons who deal with surgery are not capable of doing brain surgery. Very few, very rare geniuses. Because the brain is such a complex phenomenon, in a small skull, there are 7 million nerves. Your hand while making the surgery should not move a little, otherwise you will cut thousands of nerves, which will have effect all over the body. You don't know where that will lead to paralysis, to blindness, because everything is controlled by the brain. If there is a tumor, you have to remove it with such care that nothing else is even touched. Very fragile is the brain. And the problems that man has created are very complex. You cannot have simple solutions. What simple solution for birth control? Celibacy? It does not work. What simple solution for cancer? Drinking the polluted water of India? Water therapy or urine therapy? Urine therapy seems to be the simplest medicine for all diseases. Another ex-Prime Minister Morarji Desai was preaching the simplest thing for all kinds of diseases. Mental, physical, psychological, does not matter. Just drink your own. And it is always available. You don't have to go to any expert. Just carry a glass with you. Sometimes I wonder whether to laugh or to weep. And what he says, that compromises don't work, but he has forgotten a word that is synthesis. Compromises don't work, but a synthesis, a synchronicity works. It is already at work in the whole universe. It is at work in your body. It is in work everywhere. Wherever life is, there is spirit and there is matter. But it is a very deep harmony. He has completely forgotten the word synthesis. And that is the only solution for the world. The West and East should meet. Matter and spirit go hand in hand. Zorba and Buddha should dance together. And finally he said, our heritage. He does not understand at all what is our heritage. Eternal poverty. On one hand, few people were immensely rich. And the whole society, on the other hand, absolutely poor. And the religions and the so-called moralists convince the poor that your poverty is not because of the rich people. It is because of your evil acts in the past life. You are suffering. Just patiently suffer so that in the future life you don't have to be poor. And the rich people are enjoying their good, virtuous acts in the past life. So don't feel jealous, don't have any envy. Because of these moralists and these religious people, India has never known any revolution against the bourgeois society, against the feudal lords, against the exploiters. Your whole morality, your whole religion protects the wasted interests and destroys the morale, the integrity of the poor. You have behaved with the poor like cattle. I am surprised that a well-educated man, young, should talk such nonsense. He also said, our heritage is not about economic growth, but spiritual enlightenment. What does he know about spiritual enlightenment? And the country needs economic growth. And he is saying our heritage is not about economic growth. Sure. That's why you are suffering such poverty. And if you continue that rotten heritage, sick to the soul, you will suffer ultimate death on this planet. This will be the first country to commit suicide just by explosion of population. And the Prime Minister of the country says, our heritage is not concerned with economic growth. But the bread comes under economics, and the clothes come under economics, and the shelter, a house, comes under economics. So what do you want? everybody to stand naked under the sun and hungry and thirsty and just be spiritual, not be a body? Then the only way is to commit suicide. Why unnecessarily torture yourself? Just jump into the ocean. So you will be simply spiritual. And from where he got this world enlightenment? Does he know what is meditation? I was talking to his mother, Indira Gandhi, and she told me that next time you pass by Delhi, I would like my two sons to learn something from you about meditation. They both are out of the house. But I never went again to Delhi. She has promised Lakshmi, Lakshmi is here, because she was the mediator between me and Indira Gandhi, that I will send Rajiv to Pune. To learn something about meditation. He knows nothing about meditation, and one who knows nothing about meditation, for him enlightenment is just a great word. And the people who were listening to him were all Indians. So naturally, he fulfilled their egos. When he said that the whole earth should be one and nations should dissolve, he was addressing an international conference of the scientists. This is how politicians function. They don't have any integrity of their individuality. They are purely opportunists. When the gathering was international, the world was one. The earth was one. Naturally, the international gathering must have clamped that this is the right person and the right solution. This is a statement has been made in an Indian gathering. Now he has changed his position. This is what I call opportunism. It is the ugliest thing when one practices it. Now he is enhancing, puffing up the Indian ego, that you are the spiritual people, you don't need any economic growth, you don't need any science, you don't need any technology, you don't need any materialism. You are pure souls. All that you need is enlightenment. And what is enlightenment, Mr. Rajiv Gandhi? Accept a word. You don't have any taste of it. If you want to have a taste, I invite you here. We will give you a taste of meditation your mother always wanted. And we will make every effort to make the Prime Minister enlightened. But before that happens, you should stop talking nonsense. Remember, I am not a politician, but I want to remind you, you are the servants of the people, and I have every right to correct you. Whenever you go astray, I have to bring you right to the path. Perhaps in India nobody will dare to do it, but I have nothing to lose. I am the world's most condemned person. What else can happen? But strangely enough, these people are such cowards, they don't even answer. The Sutra. Once Yakusan asked his disciple Ungan, "What are you doing?" Ungan said, "I am carrying water." Yakusan asked, "What about that fellow?" "That fellow" always refers to the innermost Buddha. Not to use any name, just an indication, what about that fellow? You are carrying water, that's okay, but what about that fellow, what he is doing? Ungan replied, "He is here." He is always here. He knows no other place. No other time. He is always here and always now. Yakusan then asked, "For whom are you working?" Ungan replied, "I am busy on behalf of that fellow." That fellow is again the Buddha, hidden inside your being, your spirituality, your eternal being, your cosmic existence. Yakusan asks, "Why don't you let that fellow work with you?" Ungan said, "Osho, Osho is really a great word of deep gratitude, love and honor. So much is implied that it cannot be translated by reverend. That reverend looks so ugly and Christian. Osho is a very close and intimate, very loving address, with full of honor and gratitude. Osho, don't make a fool of him. He is my innermost being. I would not allow him to carry water. I can do that. He is thirsty. And he is purely a presence. It cannot directly work upon matter. I have to be the mediator. I am between him and the world. If he wants anything, I have to do it. He cannot directly come into contact with matter. He is pure space, unbounded, sheer joy. It is for me to work for him. I am working for him, but also don't make a fool of him. Don't ask such questions. You know perfectly well that all that I am doing is for him. My whole body is dedicated to him. This is dedication. This is surrender. Yaku-san said, don't say that. Yaku-san insisted, this is, both are masters, both are enlightened, both know what they are saying and what is being replied. But again, just chit-chat. When two masters are sitting, what they will do? That's just pulling each other's leg. Yaku-san said, don't say that. Has he ever carried water? Ungan did not reply. Yaku-san has gone beyond the limit. And he knows it. No answer is needed. How pure a space can carry water? How pure presence can interact with matter? The body is a tremendous phenomenon. It is standing in between the pure space and the solid matter. It makes possible a certain interaction between two opposite polarities. Body is doing a tremendous job with great intelligence and wisdom. You should respect your body. You should love your body. It is the instrument for your Buddha. Once Yaku-san said to Dogo, Ungan's brother, I have a very special phrase which I have never told anybody. Dogo observed, it is already following you. Again, two masters. You have not said to anybody, that's okay, but I can see. It is following you. On another occasion, Ungan asked Yaku-san, how do you express the phrase? The phrase means that which cannot be said. So it is simply used as an indicative, the phrase, just as we were talking about the Buddha, that fellow. How do you express that phrase? Because basically it is inexpressible. You cannot say what it is. You can bring people to look at it. You can open the window and you can bring your friend to look at the sunset, or the flowers, or a bird on the wing in the blue sky, or the stars in the sky, anything. You cannot say, but you can show. And the inner experiences are so deep, they cannot be brought to language. Yaku-san was asked by Ungan, how do you express the phrase? Yaku-san said, it is not a question of expression. It is a question of experience. Or even better, it is a question of experiencing. Because experience seems to be a little dead, not a process, but a complete thing. Experience. You have come to the full point. Experiencing helps a little more. The full point has not come. All is not said. The river has just started flowing towards the ocean. It has not reached. Rather than a noun, a verb is more expressive. But strangely enough, all over the world, all the languages have turned verbs into nouns, into pronouns. Have you ever seen a river? Because it is always moving. Remember Heraclitus, who said you cannot step in the same river twice. If somewhere in the eternity I have the chance to meet Heraclitus, and there is every possibility, because he will be looking for the moment to meet me. I have been in agreement with him, but I say he has only told half the truth. You cannot step in the same river twice, he says. I say you cannot step in the same river even once. Because by the time your feet touches, the water underneath is flowing. The river is changing. Your feet goes an inch deeper, the water is changing. Both above and below. Your feet goes on deeper, water is changing on both the sides, below and above. When you touch the bottom, it is something different water that you have never touched in the beginning. You cannot step even once. Rather than river, it will make language a little difficult. Perhaps that is the reason we tolerate it. A river should be called rivering, not river. It is continuously rivering, flowing. A tree should be called tree, not a tree, because it is growing every moment. New leaves are coming, old leaves are falling, new buds are opening, old flowers are dropping their petals. It is a constant process. In existence, everything is a process. Nothing is an event. You say yourself you are young, but do you know you are getting old every moment? You say you are alive, but do you know you are coming closer to your death every moment? As I see it, the moment you were born, your death was also born with you. One feet is life, another feet is death. You are a combination of both. When you were born, you were 99% life and 1% death. When you will die, you will be 99% death and 1% life. You will be surprised by my statement that I am saying 1% life? Yes. Because even in the grave, your hairs will go on growing. Your nails will go on growing. Your beard, you will not be shaving anymore, it will start growing. You will become a hippie in the grave. So I say 1%. But I repeat my statement, there are only processes in existence, never an event. Everything is constantly moving. Whether you realize it or not. Do you realize the earth you are sitting on is running fast? In 24 hours, it takes one round of the sun. You are not sitting on a static earth. Neither the sun is static. It is moving around some bigger sun, which is only a guess by the scientists. We have not been able to discover yet which is the center the sun is going around. It must be far away. But everything is on the move. And the moment you stop, you are dead. Never stop growing. Never stop flowing. And look around the world as a flux, not a dead thing. Yakusan said, it is not a question of expression. But Dogo was also great. He said, he commented, now, Yakusan, you have expressed it. Even to say this much, that nothing can be said about it, you have said something about it. One of the great, perhaps the greatest logician of the contemporary world was Ludwig Wittgenstein, a strange fellow. He was a student of Bertrand Russell in the university. And he found, and Bertrand Russell is an authentic teacher. Any other teacher would have expelled Wittgenstein. I have been expelled so many times that I don't think, except a man like Bertrand Russell, would have tolerated Wittgenstein, because Bertrand Russell was recognized authority on logic, on mathematics, because mathematics is a byproduct of logic. But Wittgenstein was far ahead than Bertrand Russell. And it is the greatness of Bertrand Russell to look into his copies. While he was giving notes, he was taking something else far beyond his notes. He was writing, so it appeared he is taking his notes, what he is saying. But he suspected. Sometimes he was not saying anything and he was still writing, because his note was not complete. So one day he went by the side, he stood and looked at the note. He could not believe. This was not what he has said. This was something he has always wanted to say but was not able. He looked at Wittgenstein, he said, "What you are doing here? I have never come across a greater genius in logic. I would love to see your PhD thesis on logic. I hope to learn much from your thesis." This is greatness. This is authentic sincerity. A world-known, famous professor and philosopher says to his student, "I am looking forward for your thesis." And he wrote the thesis, and Bertrand Russell wrote the introduction to it. The thesis is something of pure genius. In that thesis there comes one sentence, "When I was a student of logic, I crossed that sentence," because the sentence is, "That which cannot be said should not be said." So I wrote a letter to Wittgenstein that you have said it. That which cannot be said, should not be said, it still is a statement about that. You should remove this statement. Unfortunately, he was dead. Some of his friend wrote to me that it is too late, otherwise he was so sincere. He would have crossed the line. He would have understood it immediately, that even to say that nothing can be said is still saying something. Dogo commented, "Now, Yaku-san, you have expressed it, because you say it is not a question of expression. You have, in an indirect way, said something about that which remains beyond all expression. This expression included." It is beautiful to see two masters encountering each other. It has never happened in the world anywhere else except in the lineage of Zen. Because Zen takes everything playfully. The most serious is the most playful. Even masters play like children. Arguing, pulling each other's legs. Just arguing for argument's sake, it is just such a joy. and both know. That it is simply passing time, drinking coffee and arguing great things, and both know that it cannot be argued. Just finish your tea. But it is a beautiful scene. Even to visualize it is of tremendous beauty. Tacitus wrote, this I could only say at flowery Mount Yoshino. The Yoshino mountain is full of flowers. So many flowers, so many colors, such lush green. What can be said about it? How to condense it into a statement? I can only say this I can only indicate. I could only say at flowery Mount Yoshino. He is talking about the inner. Nothing can be said, only this. An indication, a finger pointing to the moon. Manisha has a question. I have heard you say that Buddha said, truth is what works. Before going deeper into the question, first I have to explain what Buddha meant. Truth cannot be expressed in words, but devices can be created which can wake you up to the world of truth. Those devices are not true or untrue. They are just fiction. But because they work and bring you to the experience of truth, he defined truth as that which works. If a device works to wake you up and bring you to the world of truth, you know that device was fiction, but it has led you to truth. You have to be grateful to the device. It has done a miracle. Hence Buddha says, that which works is also true. True in the sense that it leads you towards the truth. All meditations are true in the sense that they will bring your enlightenment. My words are true in the sense that someday you may hear the wordless message between my words in the silences of my heart. If it works, then it becomes true. Because it leads you to the truth. Symbolically, Buddha says, truth is what works. S- Science will accept his definition perfectly. Nobody knows what is electricity. Not even Thomas Alva Edison, who discovered it. But nobody cares. You don't have to know what electricity is, you have to know only how to put the switch on. The switch that brings the electricity immediately is true, it works. You don't have to go into the whole dynamics and the theorization. And there is no way really to find out what exactly electricity is. Have I told you the story of Thomas Alva Edison? He has gone for a holiday to a resort village. The village has a small high school and they were having their annual function. And the students from different departments have made things as an exhibition for all the villagers to come and see. The art students have made paintings, toys. The science students have made few electrical things which will amaze the villagers. For example, you put your hand underneath the tape and the water immediately comes out without touching any button or anything. Just the pressure of your hand is enough to trigger and the water comes. As you pull the hand out, the water stops. They had made railway trains, small trains running on the track round and round. And they had many things. Thomas Alva Edison just wandering around the village, enjoying the open air and the trees and the sun and the sea air, crisp and salty, came across the school and he saw a great crowd going there. He said, "What is the matter?" They said, "It is the annual function. And our students had made many beautiful things. We are going to see. Would you like to come?" So he joined with the crowd. He has time. He directly went to the electrical section. That was his lifelong work. He was the first man to see the electricity bulb come to light in the whole history of man. 3 years it took for him. You just push the button, you don't know how people have worked hard just to create a button for you. 3 years, 20 colleagues started and by everybody left. Because this man seems to be mad. Nothing is helping, everything fails. Electricity does not come. They told him that drop it, you will simply waste your life. You have many things, other things to do. He said, "When I take one thing in my hand, unless I finish it or I get finished, there is no way to distract me. If you are tired, frustrated, you don't understand scientific research. They said, what do you mean? We don't understand scientific research. We are all scientists. He said, you may be scientists, but you don't understand the fundamentals. One fundamental is that every failure brings you closer to the victory. If there are 300 possibilities and I have failed 299 times, now is the time. One never knows. Yes, 3 years have passed. You are frustrated. I am rejoiced that so many things are cut out. Now very few alternatives remain. The day is not far away. And within 3 months, he managed one night working hard. It must have passed 3 o'clock. It was already morning. When suddenly, for the first time in the whole history of man, he saw the light bulb, radiating light. He was almost hypnotized. He just looked and looked at the beauty of it. He could not believe that he has succeeded. And at that time, Mrs. Thomas Alva Edison screamed that put that light out and come to bed. She had no idea that this is not ordinary light. But Edison went in and said, you don't know, it is not any old light that you know. It is my 3 years and 3 months continuous work. And 20% have started with me and all have left. Some after 1 year, some after the second year, some after the third year. Electricity has been caught. You come and see. The wife was amazed. She never believed in Thomas Alva Edison. No wife believes in their husbands. That this fellow is going to succeed, forget all about it. He is simply mad. So when he went into the school, he saw the trains running, he saw the tape coming just by the pressure of the hand underneath it. He asked the student who was very happy to show him, because he knew that he is not the man from the village. Just by his dress and everything, he looked a visitor. So he was very interested to show him everything. And Thomas Alva Edison took great interest in everything that the students have made. Then he asked one question. How these things are working? The boy said, electricity. Edison asked, what is electricity? The boy said, what is electricity? That I don't know. How it works, I know. But I will call my science teacher. He is a graduate, BSc, first class. He will certainly know. So he called his science teacher and he also said, forgive me, sir. We know how to use it. But we don't know what it is. But perhaps our principal, who has a DSC, Doctor of Science, he must be knowing what is electricity. So they pulled the principal and the principal said, forgive me, sir,
I know how it works, but what it is, I am sorry to say, I don't know. Edison laughs and he said to them, you don't feel embarrassed. I am Thomas Alva Edison. I also don't know what electricity is. All that I know how it works. Science will accept Buddha's statement, truth is what works. Don't ask what it is. Another great philosopher, G. Moore, has written a book on ethics. And the only subject in 250 pages is what is good. Because without knowing good, how can you manage ethics, morality and all kinds of things? First, you should exactly define what is good. And after 250 pages of very dense argumentation, finally he comes to the conclusion, good is indefinable. It is just like if somebody asks you, what is yellow? You can say, yellow is yellow. But what it is? We are living in a mysterious world where nothing is known. All that we know how to use things. If we go to the root to know, we will be confronted with an immense mystery which has not been solved even in ordinary matters. What is yellow? What is good? Manisha is asking, I understand that to mean that when delivered by an enlightened master, truth is what works. His truth is implicit in everything he says or does. Having no ego means that there is no motivation for anything other than the truth. I heard an old sannyasin say, I don't exaggerate, I lie like my master. It seems to me there is a fatal flaw in his words. Will you please speak about truth and trust? Before speaking about truth and trust, I can only imagine two persons who could have made that statement. I don't exaggerate, I lie like my master. One is Subhuti, who is not here. And another is Krishna Prem, who is sitting here. Both are ex-journalists. And although they have been with me, and they love me, but they cannot drop their old orientation. It is true that all devices are lies. But because they work, they are true. But his saying that I don't exaggerate I lie like my master. Am I right, Krishna Prem? It is your statement. You have forgotten? I will produce witnesses. Stand up. You say you have not made this statement? No. You know it perfectly well. Do you want me to produce witnesses? Then say the truth, that you have made this statement. And then there are only two alternatives left for you. There is no need to have an apology from me, because I love you, you can say anything. But you have to apologize to all the sannyasins, you have hurt them badly. Hold your hands and go round. Sit down. It is very difficult to forget your old orientation. Journalists deal only with rumors and lies and all kinds of rubbish. You cannot say such a thing about me. I may sometimes commit mistakes about facts, because that is not my world. For 15 years I have not read a single book. Whatever information I get from my secretaries. They read it to me. I don't know whether it is exactly true or not, and I don't care. My concern is totally different. My concern is somehow to bring you to an awakening. I will use everything possible. It doesn't matter whether it is factual or non-factual. A journalist lives in the world of facts. He has nothing to do with truth. All facts are not necessarily truths. They may appear. I am reminded of one English historian, Edmund Burke. He was writing the whole world's history. He has wasted almost 40 years writing it. And one day, just behind his house, a murder was committed. In that full daylight, before witnesses, he ran and he asked the people who have seen how the person has been shot dead and how the person who killed him escaped. But there were witnesses. He could not believe his eye. It happened before them. But everybody has his own story. Seeing the situation, he went into the house and burnt the whole history that he has been writing for 40 years about the whole world since the beginning, from Adam and Eve up to now. He burnt it down because he said, if eyewitnesses cannot agree, what I have to say about Gautam Buddha or Jesus Christ, whether they existed or not? What to say about man, whether he was coming from Africa or from different parts of the world or from Mongolia? At a time there was the theory accepted by all the scientists that life was born in Mongolia. And from there it spread. And the reason for it was the Sanskrit language. The North Indians have come from Mongolia. Perhaps 90,000 years before, and they have pushed the natives from North India towards South India. That's why you find the South Indians are black. They are not Aryans. And their languages have no connection with Sanskrit. But all European languages, English, Swiss, Danish, Dutch, French, Italian, German, all European languages have 30%, 40% Sanskrit roots. One language, Lithuanian, has 90% Sanskrit roots. German has 40% roots from Sanskrit. This was the reason that these people have lived together in Mongolia. It is one family of the Aryans. And when the population became big and they were hunters and they have hunted all the animals, so they started moving in different directions, small groups. One group reached to India, one group reached to Iran. Its old name is Iran, the country of the Aryans. That Iran has become Iran. And branches from the same family from Mongolia reached to England, to Holland, to Germany, to Sweden, to Switzerland, to whole Europe. This is one family because the Sanskrit proves basically that all these people once lived together and then dispersed because the food shortage was there and they have to move into different directions. You should look at the world map and cut the map of South Africa and South India and try to put them together, you will be surprised. They match perfectly. There was a time when South Africa and India were connected. Now it is a well-established fact that continents go on continuously moving. Under the continents, far deep, there is water. They are floating in water. Africa moved, but the cut remained the same. The breaking point, the South Indian languages And the South Indians have some negroid blood in them. That's why they are black. And that's why their languages don't have anything to do with Sanskrit. Now, that theory has changed. They say that life started in South Africa, because South Africa has the chimpanzees, the apes, the gorillas, because Indian monkeys are very small, they cannot become man. Mongolian monkeys are very small, they cannot become men. So now that old idea from Sanskrit has receded back, a new idea has come into light, that life was born in Africa. Perhaps there is no contradiction in it. It is possible that life was born in Africa and few chimpanzees moved to Mongolia. And they prospered in Mongolia and then overpopulation, and they started moving towards Europe, to India. There is no contradiction in both. But who is to decide now? There is a small fraction of scientists who say life must have born in different places simultaneously. It is not one place. That seems to be also relevant, because Chinese, Japanese, the whole East, Far East, does not fit with any theory. Neither the African theory fits with the Chinese. The African apes, chimpanzees and gorillas have real thick beards. Look at the Chinese beard, you can count the hairs on your 10 fingers. Look their high cheekbones, which are not available anywhere in the world. It seems to me there is no contradiction in all the three. Perhaps in different places life arose simultaneously. There is no reason why to deny it, because difference is so clearly. Chinese has nothing to do with Sanskrit, not even to do with alphabet. It is a non-alphabetical language. Nothing is common with Sanskrit and nothing is common with Africa. Chinese and Japanese and the far eastern people, Taiwan and Korea, they must have been born separately. Perhaps the theory based on Sanskrit has its own truth. Certainly these people have lived together someplace, and that place seems to be only Mongolia. Because now Mongolia is almost empty. You will find only reminders of some very ancient cities, houses, roads, but nobody lives there. So the people who lived there must have moved. Because the scarcity of food. So that also seems to be right. And the African theory that life was born in Africa, perhaps one section of life must have born in Africa. But all these are guesswork. So sometimes you may find my facts not collaborating with the fashionable theory. But don't think I am lying. I have never lied in my life. If I have lied, I have lied only as a device to help you to come to truth. And Krishna Prem, if you want to lie like your master, be like your master. Before that, you are simply lying. Don't bring me in. Even right now you have witnessed, he lied. First he denied, then he shrugged his shoulders. When I told that I will bring witnesses, that was a lie. But the lie brought the truth immediately. I am absolutely a scientific person. The moment he saw that I know about the witnesses, I know nothing. Just I knew the way he denied, I could see his heartbeat going faster. Then he shrugged his shoulders as if he has forgotten, and it is just only 2 days old. I was going to take the question yesterday, but he was not here. So I waited. And the moment I said witnesses, he immediately accepted the yes. This is how I bring truth through lies. But I am not lying. My lying is not destructive. It is not to deceive you. It is just to bring you a more awareness, more consciousness. It is not the fault of Krishna Prem. His whole programming is that of a journalist. I feel sad and sorry for him because he loves me. But his programming pulls him farther away. The same was the case with Subhuti. Twice he left the commune. Again he came and said, I have changed completely, I will not bring my journalist mind in, please allow me in. Twice I allowed him, again he did the same. Now I have told, the doors are closed. You have closed yourself. That was the other alternative I was going to give to Krishna Prem. But because he has asked apology to all of the sannyasins, the other alternative is not needed. Otherwise, I was going to say to him, leave this place. You have been enough here, and if nothing changes in you, what is the point? I hope this question will help him towards a transformation. And Manisha, you are asking, will you please speak about truth and trust? I will not. Because those are the things that have to be experienced, not to be talked about. It has been a serious time. Now forget all about it. Here comes Sardar Gurdayal Singh. Chinaman Chinks is telling his friend Wu, the barman, about his amazing cure with Dr. Hak Mi. But, says Wu, you were sick for over 5 months with some rare unknown disease. What happened? Says Chinks, me, very sick. Man, so me first call doctor, you dumb. Me take his medicine. Me very more sick. So then me get doctor foo-foo. Then me takes his medicine. Then me very bad. Me think me going to die. So me Kali Dr. Hak Mi. Yes, yes, explains Wu. Then what happened? Well, says Chinks, Dr. Hak Mi too busy. No can come. So me get well. Duncan Darkey walks into Dr. Doom's office feeling a little out of condition. Ah, yes, says Dr. Doom, you must run 10 miles a day and not take the bus. You must eat lots of tofu and cut out the cake, beer and cigars. You must drop sex for 1 month, and whenever you have the urge, just drink a glass of prune juice instead. In fact, drink 3 glasses. And the doctor babbles on like this for 30 minutes. Duncan eases himself up out of the chair and heads for the door. Wait! Shouts Dr. Doom. You have not paid my advice. Thanks, Doc, says Duncan, but I am not taking it. Pope the Polar is trotting around the Vatican when little Giovanni comes racing up to him. Hello, my son, says the Polak Pope. Can I help you? Yes, says Giovanni. What is the time? Pope the Polak fumbles inside his robes and after a long search brings out a clock tied to his crucifix. It is exactly 5:30, says the Pope. Well, says little Giovanni, turning around at 6 o'clock, you go to hell. And Giovanni races away, pissed off. Pope the Polak picks up his robes and chases after Giovanni as fast as he can, dashing across St. Peter's Square, running full speed around the corner. Pope the Polak crashes into Cardinal Kef's ass. Holy Jesus! Shouts Kef's ass, "Where are you going so fast?" That little boy puffs the Polak. "I told him it was 5:30, and he told me at 6 o'clock to go to hell." "Really?" says Kef's ass, looking at his watch. "But why so fast? You have still got half an hour." Nivedana. Close your eyes and feel your body to be completely frozen. This is the right moment to look inwards. Gather your whole life energy, your total consciousness, and with an urgency, as if this is going to be your last moment, rush towards the center of your being, faster and faster, as you come closer to the center, you are coming closer to your Buddha. A little more, a little more. Deeper you go, greater becomes the silence. The moment you reach to the center, you have touched eternity. This moment, Gautam the Buddha auditorium is full of 10,000 Buddhas. The only quality the Buddha had is witnessing. Witness that you are not the body. Witness that you are not the mind. Witness that you are not the astral or the subtle bodies. Witness that you are only the witness and nothing else. This is your purest consciousness. This is your awakening. To make your witnessing deeper, Nivedana, relax, let go, but remain centered. A great ecstasy is showering over you. You will find yourself drunk. It is being drunk with the divine. Slowly, slowly, you start melting like ice. And the Buddha auditorium becomes an ocean of pure consciousness without any ripples. You are the most blessed people in the world because nobody is looking inwards. Nobody is trying to find his ultimate source. This will transform your very life. This will give you a new clarity about everything. This will make you an individual with absolute freedom from all setters, prisons, religions, nations, races. This will make you the citizen of the cosmos. The whole world is yours. The whole existence rejoices in your meditation. Before Nivedana calls you back, collect as much experiencing as you can. The joy, the blissfulness, the benediction. The great matter of being one with the whole and persuade the Buddha to come along with you. He has to become your very heartbeat, your very breathing. He has to be always present in you. He is there but hidden deep, far deep. He has to be brought closer and closer. So soon every word that you speak comes from him. Every silence is his silence. Every gesture is his gesture. The day all your songs are His and all your dances are His. Is the greatest day of your millions of lives. Nivedana, come back. But come back as Buddhas, with the same grace, the same beauty, the same silence, and sit down for a few moments. Just to recollect where you have been, what space you have traveled in, what golden path you have moved on, and what you have brought with you from the new space, a new birth, a resurrection. Remember it. Meditation is a death and a resurrection. In this great moment, I don't want Krishna Prem to remain sad. I want Nirvana to put Krishna Prem's names on his list first. This is what I mean. Straight to the point of enlightenment.